I missed our class on chapter 17 and 18, and I'd love to have been here. And so in the 17th chapter, I'm not even going to go back there, except that it tells us that Abraham was 99 years old and he was blameless before God. This is going to be the chapter where we say the name of Abram and Sarai are changed. And just to bring your minds back to what you studied, and God made a covenant with Abraham here. And what was the sign of that covenant? Okay, circumcision. And if you would notice, back in verse 1, Abraham was 99 years old. The Lord appeared to Abraham and said to him, I am God Almighty. Walk before me and be blameless, and I will establish my covenant between me and you. That is at the heart of this covenant of circumcision. It was the faith of Abraham that we've been spending so much time trying to develop and talk about, a man who trusted and obeyed God. And it was on that basis that circumcision was given as a token, if you would, a required token of this kind of faith. And that's what was trying to be instilled in the offspring, the seed that eventually would bring the Messiah into the world. So as you looked at that chapter, that this is an important matter here, and I appreciate Will dealing with that. And then I intentionally left so I wouldn't have to deal with chapter 18. And so I appreciate Will doing that. And that's tongue in cheek. But there's some language in here where it talks about the Lord appearing to him by the oaks of Mamre. And you remember there are three folks that come his way. And it is interesting as you look down through here, and I know you all discussed this, and I'm not trying to rehash, I'm just trying to reconnect as we go forward, that it uses the word Yahweh in here, my Lord. Yeah, when you look at it first, you might say, well, here he bows, and you only bow, if it's divine. We don't worship angels. We know that from the book of Revelation. But when we get to chapter 19, where we're at tonight, we see that these angels. And what that is a reflection of is the honor and the respect. It shows subordination to someone else. So that's not the decisive factor. And when Will and I talked about this, and I said, well, my tendency is to think it may be Christ before he became incarnate, but I don't know. And so that's where I like to leave it. I don't know. And what happens is we get wrangled around with that kind of stuff and we miss the whole point of the chapter. And so as we look at this, we find that God's making promises to Abraham. And then he says, well, there's Abraham. I'm going to do all this to him. And it says in verse 18, he'll become a great and a mighty nation. And in him, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. For I've chosen him in order that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness, justice, in order that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. And then he says, well, shall I tell Abraham about what's going on in Sodom, because Lot's over there, and he does. And, of course, what is the scenario when Abraham is told, hey, they're great sinners in Sodom, and punishment's coming. I'm going to bring that out upon him. What's Abraham's response here in the last part of this chapter? Okay. Yeah. And basically, we might say, are you just indiscriminately going to wipe out the righteous and wicked altogether? And it tells us, no, God will deal justly. And he does. Now, I may not understand sometimes as I read through the Bible. I might say, well, that doesn't seem right to me. Listen, God always deals justly. If I don't understand some situation, that just means I don't understand. That's who God is. So you know that. And again, I'm sorry I wasn't in his class. I'd love to sit in on this. But that's where we're at. And so he says, no, I won't. And if there's 10 righteous souls, then I will spare it. And there were not. So when we get to chapter 19, our study tonight, two of the three that are introduced in chapter 18, it says, are two angels came to Sodom in chapter 19, verse 1. Any comments you'd like to make before we hit this chapter about Sodom and Gomorrah? If you remember back in chapter 13, Lot went there. Their herds became so great. There was squabbling going on between the herdsmen because they were such great herds. And Abraham says, you go to the left, I'll go to the right. You go to the right, I'll go to the left. Lot chose the Jordan Valley in chapter 13 and verse 10. It was well watered everywhere. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar.
Yeah.
How beautiful of a description is that intended to be of this land that Lot chose? I mean, how is there anything else you could describe? How could you describe it more lusciously? This is beautiful. He's finding the greatest examples here, the Nile Valley, the Garden of Eden, the Jordan was like that. But there was a hang up, the problem in verse 13. Now, the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly, wicked and sinners exceedingly, and sinners against the Lord. So that's where Lot moves to, just to reiterate where we've been. So Moses has introduced that already. And here in chapter 19, then, I'd like to read verses 1 through 20. Let's just do 1 through 11. Could I get a volunteer, a reader, and we'll go to our conversation. Samuel, please.
Chapter 19, 1 through 11. The two angels came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed himself with his face to the earth and said, "My lords, please turn aside from your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go on your way." They said, "No, we will spend the night in the town square." But he pressed them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house. He made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people to the last man surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us that we may know them." Lot went out to the men at the entrance, shut the door after him, and said, "I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring them out to you, and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof." But they said, "Stand back." And they said, "This fellow came to sojourn. He has become the judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them." And they pressed hard against the man Lot and drew near to break the door down. But the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they wore themselves out groping for the door.
When I was first a Christian, I believed the Bible was true. I'm sorry, but even though I was in the world, it was hard for me to believe that people were this brazen. I accepted it, but I don't think that anymore. I'm sorry. Life is taught and study is taught that sometimes people become very depraved. There is stuff going on in the world right now that I wouldn't even start to mention standing in front of you. And, I know sort of secondhand of some of the kinds of things that happen within the country in some of those places. And it just breaks your heart. These folks were cedars, sinners exceedingly, it tells us. And not only were they engaged with sin, and we have a mixed audience, so I'm going to be very selective in what I say. Not only were they involved with sinning, But what else comes out in this text? This is not the first time that these unlawful sexual things have happened in the world. So why Sodom?
Okay. I think what's implied there is it was every man, you know, and going back to Abraham's attempt to intercede, you know, he kind of whittled God down to just 10 righteous souls. And yet Sodom was destroyed, which suggests that there weren't even 10 righteous people aside from Lot and his family, or at least some of his family.
Yeah.
So I think that's, you know, you're right. This kind of depravity has been around, but in this particular situation, it was so pervasive that everyone in the city, I mean, there, God couldn't even find 10 righteous people.
Okay. And how about the openness of what's happening in this text?
No barriers.
Yeah. No barriers, just brazen. When it used to be said, folks came out of the closet. And they came out of the closet, they turned the lights on and got a megaphone. That's what's happened since then. Well, that's the picture here. the things that happen here, again, I'll be careful about how I say this, but are horrible. And as these folks come to Lot's house, what is offered to keep that from happening is just wrong. But it might be said this way. Number one, according to that part of the world and other places, when you come under the protection of my home, I will give whatever I have to protect you. We don't understand hospitality in that way. In 1991, I was getting ready to go to India for the first time, and I didn't go because the Persian Gulf War broke out, and India just went in. It was like a boiling pot. My friend Gary Sandusky was there already, and another guy with him, another guy was coming in. They decided they'd wait a little bit till he got there because they didn't want to leave him by himself. And the fellow that he was staying with said, "It is okay. They will have to kill you or me before they kill you." And he meant that. I will give my life. You're under my home and whatever it takes. Now, I say that in view of this, not to say everything that happens here is okay, but our perception of the sanctity of a refuge like that, of hospitality, is impressive. And there are still places in the world that think that way. So that's other observations that you see here or thoughts. Tim.
Just that if you look at this, the decision, all of us are revolted by the decision Lot makes.
Yeah.
And the things that he would be willing to do are something it's totally revolting. And yet you think, well, what is it that he could have possibly been telling himself? And the answer is an answer that actually we can kind of relate to. We often have gotten ourselves into a spot and then say, I had no choice.
Okay.
When the truth of the matter is that it was decisions Lot had made previously that had gotten him to a point where he had to be telling himself, I have no choice but to do something horrific. And I think that's something that we can actually learn from this ourselves, is that oftentimes it's the choices you make earlier on that will have ramifications that will lead to something horrible.
That's right. You paint yourself in the corner. Now what do you do? It's the things that happened before. That's a very good point. Okay. Other things. Anything else? Yes, brother.
I always found it interesting when Jesus talks about Sodom.
Okay.
He talks about that Capernaum. The miracles that occurred in Sodom that were performed in Capernaum, they would repent it, you know, and it would be more tolerable for Sodom than Capernaum.
Yeah.
I found that to be quite powerful kind of statement for him. I assume he said that because he was there. And so they would be less tolerable for Capernaum because he was there. So take it a step further for us. We have more than they did in the first century.
Okay.
So and we worship freely as of now in this country. And so what would be the tolerable nature for us in judgment if we do not obey?
Sure. That's very, very, very good point. Okay. And again, it shows accountability and responsibility that come with having. With blessings and gifts come responsibilities. And so it's those are interesting passages. Anything else here? I'll go a few directions. Shannon.
Things that I don't understand, but get in 2 Peter 2:7, what is described as being righteous.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't understand the mindset of what he said as to, you know, don't take these guys here, you know, have my daughters.
Yeah.
Don't understand that at all. But yet, you know, he can still be, you know, identified and defined as being righteous. And, you know, it's in some ways maybe another reflection, just like Abraham. Abraham wasn't perfect, but yet he's known as being faithful and being righteous.
Okay. So you look at the bigger picture of Lot.
Right.
He was considered a righteous man. When you look at 2 Peter 2:7 in that context, the point there is it also tells us how did Lot, I'm going to say feel, that's not the word I really want, perceive what was going on in Sodom. How did it impact him in 2 Peter 2? It tormented him. He was sore vexed, I think the old translations say. It troubled him greatly. And so I think that that's something to consider in Jude when some of these things are spoken of. I was going to wait for a minute to go over to these passages, but over in Jude also we find it talks about Sodom and Gomorrah in Jude chapter 1 verse 7. And it describes what's going on. Just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them, since they in the same way as these indulged in gross immorality. Now, bear in mind, I think this expression is trying to bring to reality. There's immorality. And then it goes beyond that. And I think of that in a different way in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Y'all are involved here with sexual immorality in a kind that the Gentiles don't even do. So anyway, what's happening here is bad. And I read some things where folks said, well, Lot understood as bad as this offer that he made is, this other is more depraved. Take that for what it's worth. But he goes ahead to say here, they indulged in gross immorality and went after strange flesh, are exhibited as an example in undergoing the punishment of eternal fire. 2 Peter 2. The New American Standard, I think, says, are an everlasting example of those who would live in this wicked way. And so God did this. Now, later on, when the Israelites leave, remember, who's writing Genesis? Who's penning it? Moses is. When the Israelites leave Egypt, they come to Mount Sinai, where are they going to be passing in this area? And so as Moses writes this, I wonder about what he thought about that, what the people thought about that. Now, here is an everlasting example of wickedness. When you look at Leviticus chapter 18, and I don't, because of time, I'll not go over there. But what he does is he lists a whole bunch of various immoralities, and they are sexual sins. This is what he talks about primarily in Leviticus chapter 18. And then what he says is that this is what was going on in the land of Canaan. And I spewed them out of the land. If you do the same things, I will spew you out of the land. But it's descriptive. And so as he writes that in Leviticus, bear in mind that this example is one that has stood fast for a long time. Okay. And so I think that's interesting.
Thank you. I really like the point about, you know, not having made a series of decisions, but that did not seem to have been, you know, crazier decisions.
Yeah.
Particularly your parenting style. But you know, what I also see here is a situation, and we were talking about the Corinthians where Paul tells us that God will provide a way of escape, you know, conditions that we can't stand against. And in some sense, I see this as a visual illustration of that. Okay. The angels are here to tell Lot, you need to take your family and go, because we're about to destroy this place. And in many respects, God is providing that way of escape for Lot.
Okay.
And Lot could have chosen to have not gone. In fact, we'll see in the story here in a moment his wife, you know,
yeah,
doesn't seem to be have gotten on board with the decision entirely.
And he's dragging his feet too.
Right. But you know, how many times do we find ourselves in that same situation where we have that window is open for us?
Yeah.
And the path seems to be clear to get ourselves out of the temptation, yet we choose to stay. And it seems to be just a very vivid illustration, potentially, of that sort of scenario, which I think plays out time to time in our own lives.
Sure.
We maybe just don't see it that way in the moment, but I think we need to have that sort of awareness.
Yeah. So is this way of escape an easy escape for Lot?
It means he has to leave everything behind.
Yeah, he's going to leave loved ones behind, probably his physical stuff, his house, whatever. We're not getting all the details, but whatever he had there, they hit the road. I don't know how all the rest of that played out. But here's an opportunity he had to go. I don't know why he was hesitant to leave, because he had loved ones. It seems like he's got son-in-laws. The language you choose here, if I understand, is okay. Anyway, he's got kin here, folks, that, and they thought he was jesting. Yeah. Shannon.
To me, I just wonder, you know, he left to go to Egypt to Sodom and Gomorrah some years back, right? Like it may have been 20 years that they've been separated, perhaps. I don't know. And, you know, perhaps things changed over those 20 years. I don't know. But it seems like at some point Whitlock had decided to move on his own. I don't know. I mean, we'll never know that.
Okay.
But it just seems like things are so wicked, and yet he was there.
Okay.
In the middle of it.
Yeah, sorry for my distraction there, but your point brings a point. Here. This is a chart that I had made, used back a little bit ago, but it seems like Isaac is born, and these matters of Sodom and Gomorrah happen right before that. You remember that in chapter 18, when I come back next year, you'll have a son. And we're told, you know, in these verses that he's 100 years old when that happens. And so these matters of Sodom and Gomorrah apparently are right, you know, you look at the text. And of course, we've talked about chronology and that they don't think like we do, and oftentimes they're not chronological. But everything here seems to be pretty tied together. So this seems to be, to my perception, the same time. But you're looking here 25 years from the time he left Haran, 24 years, something like that, since they left there as a rough time frame. And again, we're talking about dates, although we were given several of these specifically. So, yeah. So I don't know if
they separated somewhere between 75 and 86.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was saying 20 years, but you know.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right on task.
Things change.
They do. Why not pull up stakes and leave?
That's a good question, because his culture that he's in is just so different than what he had, what Abraham had. They were men who, had an extreme hospitality. These people, it seems, as far as this may have been their kind of usual thing. That where it is that someone would come and not take the person in, take those in, seem that they would want to come and abuse them. And so it seems like his mind from the start to protect them. He strongly insists, after they say they're going to spend the night in the square, he insists that they come in. And then when he offers his daughter, and you think as far as that, with reasonable men, and they would hear this and they would change their minds. No, we don't want to do that. We'll go home. But he says in verse 8, only do nothing to these men, since this is the reason that they have come on the side of my roof. This is the reason that he would protect them from this.
Yeah.
And he offers, of course, his daughters. But it says, that it tells him to stand back, because this one keeps acting as a judge. And we see him in the first verse, he's in the gate of the city. And so he was evidently somewhat of a prominent man in the community. And perhaps he thought that he could bring about some change.
Okay.
And he's trying to judge and see that they didn't like any of the adjustments that he tried to give. And he said, this one keeps doing this, and we are going to take care of him. So he's trying to protect them, and he's doing everything he can. But I think this would have been a place that you, as you travel, they said, no, don't go to Sodom.
Yeah.
And there are places like that in the world today that, you don't want to go there because of a similar situation.
And that's something I'd like for us to think about for just a moment. Not every place you can live is the same. There are places you can go that influences there will have a tremendous impact on you. And if you think you stand and can't be eroded, you're mistaken. We all must be careful, because what happens is it is a drifting. It's a changing of our thinking, and it's a softening. And after a while, God's ready to vomit us out, like he talked about the Laodiceans. There's some in here, no situations. I know a situation where someone warned someone, don't go into this area. This is not good, because of the philosophy, the thinking, the immorality that's there. And but didn't listen. It didn't go well.
One of those places, New Orleans, from brother there, as we would want to send help there, they said, don't send a young man, because
okay.
the way the situation was in that place.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah. Any other comments along that line? These are real practical things, especially in the day in which we live. We don't have a society that has put up barriers and protections in the same way that they used to be around, and that was helpful. Rachel?
It is interesting, you know, in 2 Peter, where it talks about the fact that he was greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked, for he, as that righteous man lived among them day after day, he was tormenting his righteous soul over their lawless deeds that he saw and heard. So, like, he wasn't happy about it, but he stayed.
Yeah.
And then I think about his wife, and she did not want to leave, right? So, I mean, there's a possibility that he stayed there because his wife
was
wanting to stay there. You know, she wanted to stay there so badly that she looked back.
Okay.
And so, you know, I was thinking about that, that, you know, sometimes there's a house divided, and it can have terrible ramifications, you know, if you're not spiritually united.
Very good. That's a great point. I hadn't really thought about it quite in that way. My mind is, this place is so beautiful. My flocks are well. They have everything we have. We're living right downtown, as you used to say, in a small town. And living right downtown, things are great here, except Tim.
Yeah, and there's a generational effect in that Lot's soul was vexed, says the New Testament, whichever your translation says. But he was hurt by this. But then you get to his sons-in-law, and they can't even fathom, which means his daughters, you know, had found these men. They had married men who couldn't even fathom what was making Lot so upset. They thought he was joking when he said, "We've got to go."
Yeah.
And I think about that a lot now that I have grandchildren.
Sure.
I think about the, you know, if you're in a certain place and you may still have that, you know, that heart that gets hurt by the things that are going around you. But do you have your children in a place where they're going to see that as the norm, and maybe their hearts aren't hurt like yours are?
Yeah.
I mean, we fight to try to get our kids and our grandkids to understand the lines, but how much harder do we make it if we're in a place or in some sort of situation that where it seems to be the norm, where people don't think right?
Yeah. I've got a friend that died about 5 years ago. He lived in a certain area, did a lot of personal work, and good godly man. When I was with him one time, and he said, "Gail, I stayed in Sodom too long." He lost both of his kids. But he and his wife, I believe, are righteous people. But those peer influences, and anyway, just I won't go into any further. But it's a reality, and so we have to be mindful of that. Yet wherever we are, we got to make the stand. We got to put our roots down. We got to fortify our children. Noah had to do it in his day. And I don't know what all the wickedness was in Noah's day. Thoughts and intentions were wicked continually, enough so that God wiped out the world, except for, say, 8 souls. And so, you know, we know what we're supposed to do. But understand, the devil's been playing this game a long time. And he can erode our restraints and our commitment and our conviction of the will of God. So, good, great, great comments. Anybody on Zoom there have anything they'd especially like to say?
I have a question, I guess. So we know he has these two daughters who've not known a man, but we also know that he's got married daughters with sons-in-laws. Is it possible that he's got, because it says take, we're not there yet, but I'm sorry, my question's coming now.
No, I'm following.
Yeah. Because it says the daughters who are with you. So
right.
Is it possible that there are daughters who have husbands who are being left in Sodom and Gomorrah? And is that what his hesitation is? And perhaps the reason his wife looked behind?
Well, that's a possibility. The New American Standard renders that down in his, I think it's verse 14. And Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters.
Oh, okay.
And so if there is this idea that we think of in the Bible as this period of time before the ultimate consummation of the marriage,
Okay.
And so the challenge here is the language, is which way is that leaning? So it may be it's these gals, they are promised to these men, and that hasn't yet come about. Or it may be, as you're talking about, maybe there are others involved. I'm not sure the answer to that. Does anybody have any?
Well, I think the first question.
Yeah.
Son-in-law and your son. So it certainly suggests that Lot's family is larger than his wife and two daughters.
Sure.
And at this point, you know, it seems that some of Lot's kids have
didn't make it. Yeah.
Joined in or succumbed to Sodom. And really, even the two daughters that he takes with them later on, you know, they're way outside the boundaries of godly behavior themselves.
Yeah.
So I've always read that. I don't know, and I know the New American Standard does render verse 14, as you said, but then it's got a footnote that says, had married.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always taken that because Lot had sons and daughters. Two of them were unmarried. And that may
well be the case.
But I do think to the point that was made, that could have been some of Lot's hesitation, because it says even if the angels are urging him out of the city, he's hesitant to the point that they take him by the hand and take him. You know, if some of his kids are being left behind to suffer that fate along with the rest
of Sodomites, then there
certainly would be an understandable hesitation on his part. But it does just drive home the warning for parents to,
it does.
You know, be
diligent in the influences that we're allowing our kids to experience.
Okay. And
I was going to make a similar comment. We don't know for certain what it was that was, you know, keeping the partner there.
Sure.
But what we know with certainty, I think, is that whatever it was more than soul.
Okay.
And so we can surmise that, you know, whether it might have been family, or it's a major clothing store, whatever, we know that for certain.
Yeah.
And, you know, to the last one Carl was making, but, you know, I was having a conversation with you yesterday where he was really distraught over this. Thinking about, you know, coming back to that comment about, you know, it's a series of decisions kind of scenario, which is particularly as parents, what she was talking about, reflecting, you know, 17 years back, what is now a teenage daughter, the time that she gave her a cell phone. She regrets that now because of a series of things that have happened since then that have really kind of, really, I think it's something that she's concerned with, ruining her daughter.
Sure.
But the damage that we can debate all day and night, you know, merits. Why might she do that? And she did it with good intentions, but the outcome was different than what she had intended. But it could have been, probably could have been, something bad might have occurred. But it just goes to show that we didn't need to have more awareness than just in a moment, but being able to see what we call seeing around the corner. Knowing if you make this decision, what might happen. It might not happen immediately, but what are the possibilities? And particularly as it relates to, you know, if we're heads of household, we're looking out for our family, the decision might seem like the right decision to make because maybe it's my job. Maybe it allows me to progress my career. But what does it mean for the school I have to put my child in the environment that they're going to be raised in? You know, there's a lot of other things that go along with that. It might be good in one respect. It might be terrible in the decision of the others and how you weigh all those factors. But I think it's an excellent.
I think it's powerful. Yeah, I think that's powerful, and you have to make some of those decisions the best you can, as you said. And sometimes I say I made the wrong decision about that, but it seemed like that was the thing to do. And you have to differentiate between individual children. Over in Song of Solomon, chapter 8, verse 9, here are these two. Here's this daughter, or this sister, who's starting to grow up, and she's starting to mature physically. And it says, if she is a door, then you build a fence around her. If she is a wall, then you put all kinds of jewelry on her, you make her attractive. And so you know, there are decisions that had to be made along that line. But that's tough. And it's not just across the board. It doesn't work for everybody. So you have to use some wisdom as a parent. One of the downsides of raising kids is I've never done it before. And so, you know, it's like trying to learn to fly. You don't crash and burn. So.
Gail.
Yes.
I'm not sure I could hear everything that was being said, but we've talked about how the influence that Abraham perhaps had on Lot, growing up, that these were both righteous men. And yet in chapter 18, and we weren't here to hear that, verse 19 says, God is saying, I have chosen Abraham. I have chosen him in order that he may command his children. And if I understand, it's for the purpose that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice in order that the Lord may bring upon Abraham what he has spoken about him. And so there was a difference, evidently, in what these men did as fathers with their offspring, because you see the character of the daughters revealed in some time. You see evidently the ones who weren't willing to flee. There seems to be a difference then in the attitude of both these men as far as understanding who God is and yet sharing that with their families to the degree that they choose God. And that may be another indication of why God chose Abraham, because he was willing to do this. Of course, we know free will is involved, but that's a pretty powerful example.
Yeah. All right. We must stop there. We are a couple minutes over. Okay, Carl's got a point.
I think what you mentioned earlier about, the shamelessness of the open. If you look around today, this very depravity is not just being done open, it's being celebrated. Parades and TV specials and, emblems everywhere.
And then trying to be forced on others, not just toleration.
What I was going to say, they're after our kids.
Right.
As a society, and I don't think you have to be, you don't have to look very far, but there is a deliberate attempt to inculcate that attitude, not necessarily to make people engage, but at least to elevate it to normality.
Sure.
Or in some cases, even better than normal. How often is people of that lifestyle portrayed as, oh, look how much better they are than narrow-minded, bigoted, blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
And as parents, I'm just glad my kids are adults, truly, because they are after the children. Because they know if they can get, it's kindergarten age, it's right. Preschool age, because they know, and I'm using they, the capital they, but there's an effort among certain influences in our society that they can get kids thinking that that's okay, then all they have to do is wait right. Another 20 or 30 years, and, we're headed in a direction that's going to make Sodom look fine. So, not to end on a sour note, but children, parents need to be aware.
So what do we do living in the midst of a wicked society? We have to live as children of God. I can't change the rest of the world, but I must. All right. I'm over on time. Sorry about that. Not sorry about that, but appreciate the discussion here. This is such a timely matter.